Digicom Weekly Growth Marketing Podcast.
Lana, thank you for jumping on our podcast this week. Very, very excited to have you. You've had a tremendous career. Thanks for jumping on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Of course. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your story and journey?
Sure. So currently I am the head of growth at Cash App and Afterpay US. And so I lead our media and performance marketing, all of our like CRM and customer engagement, MarTech, growth marketing operations. And so prior to this, I joined Cash App actually via the acquisition of Afterpay, where I was leading our global growth team across Australia, New Zealand, the UK, Europe, the US, and Canada. And so before that, before Afterpay, I was working at a company called Hair Story. It was a direct-to-consumer hair care brand. Started, you know, I think I was maybe the 10th employee. The company was still pretty early, had a product, but no real marketing. So had the opportunity to join and lead all of our digital and kind of grow the company while I was there across the marketing function, the digital function, and serve marketing, not just for the D2C channel, but also for our B2B channel, because we sold into salons and into hairdressers. Before Hair Story, this is where I guess things get real interesting. I originally started my career on Wall Street, and I know a lot of people are probably like, what? You know, what is, like, I don't think it's as common now, or maybe it is. But so I started as a research analyst, where I spent about 5 years publishing research. And I always say, I think it was like a great, like looking back on it now, like having transitioned into marketing and growth, I think, like, to me, it makes a lot of sense. But as a research analyst, you have to really understand quantitative data, qualitative data, problem solve, present your ideas in a very cogent and clear way, both in written form and to clients and salespeople in verbal form. And you have to eventually learn how to convince people through your data and your reasoning and your logic and your research and your presentation skills that this is actually a good idea for them to take on. So all of those things, I think, like looking back, were really great to learn. And then, you know, ultimately decided, well, as much as I enjoyed finance, it wasn't for me. So I left, started a company. We went through YC, raised a few rounds of funding, ended up like having a soft landing with another company back in early 2017. And after my company, it was a fantastic experience. It was called Veeve. It was essentially like ClassPass for the beauty industry, last minute appointments via a network of salons in a handful of cities. We kind of had that founder dilemma of like, I'm a jack of all trades, but master of none. What do I do? I'm not like, I can't go and be a salesperson, or I can't go be a product person. Like, I've never done that one job before. So in my crisis of confidence, I had a few friends from YC reach out to me and wanted my help and my expertise in marketing their companies. And so started doing like fractional marketing work for a few YC companies, some of whom were friends, some of which I had the opportunity to meet. One of them was Flutterwave, which is essentially like Stripe for Africa. I got to join them shortly after their Series A. And, you know, I'm still tight with the founders, but it was really fun to basically like build their growth team and build their growth motion, and for both like their B2B and their consumer app product as well. And then had the opportunity to work on a few other companies along the way at various stages as like that fractional head of marketing, fractional head of growth. And then, you know, over time got to realize like, wow, I'm actually good at this thing. And now I want to go in house, which is how I ended up at Hair Story. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that's it's an incredible journey. You've helped so many brands along the way, you know, really, really grow. And it's kind of cool because, you know, how you'd mentioned you worked on Wall Street and you were a research analyst, and there's a quant and a qualitative and presentation, like all of that and how it ties together, especially in growth and in the startup space where, you know, you're raising capital, you're doing, you know, you're pulling a lot of insights, and then it's like, okay, here's our growth trajectory, right? Like, here's what we have to do to go hit X and Y. And I just think it's really cool that you started your career, you know, being a research analyst. And now for me, like, especially working with you, it's like anything Alana touches crushes. Like, it's really cool. Yeah. With, you know, all of the brands you've worked with, everybody's in different stages, right? You're going from like 0 to 1 million, 1 to 3 million, 3 to 5, and then you're trying to get to 10. And in each stage of growth, founders need different resourcing, or, you know, maybe it's inventory, maybe it's digital. You know, what's a piece of advice you can give founders for going from 0 to 1 and then 1 to 3?
Yeah, I think when you're going from 0 to 1, the most important thing is, first of all, you have to have a great product. So, and let's assume you have that great product. You have to know why your consumer values it and thinks it's great, which is like essentially like a very crisp value proposition that resonates with the customer. So you have to understand, and it sounds so simple, but ultimately it's like pretty difficult because there are so many products, and pretty much any vertical, there's always noise and competition. So you have to figure out that like value proposition that really lands with your customer. And then on the customer side, you really have to know that customer. So, you know, where do they spend their time? What do they value? What is, you know, what are the kind of everything that you would need in terms of building the product in the first place? But so I'd say the combination of like really nailing your messaging, your value props, your positioning, such that when you start to market, and let's assume you pick the right channel to start with, you can very quickly get signal around how to, like, whether or not something is going to work, and if you need to make a shift. So let's say you've done that, you've found your first channel, and then it's really about like building some repeatability in that motion.
Yeah. And I think, you know, also oftentimes working with, you know, brands in their nascent stages going from 0 to 1, when we're working with those brands, also founders have this idea of, hey, this is my messaging that works, only to go in market to figure out, hey, this works sometimes versus this other specific product benefit is what drives sales, right? Like very much in that form, it's like you had mentioned, it's testing and kind of learning and understanding the messaging. And I think as you're launching more and more products, and also as your company is evolving and growing, right? Once you're getting to that 1 to 3, that messaging can change over time, right?
Yeah. I mean, because your initial target customer is probably going to grow and expand. And so as the pool gets wider, like the value proposition that will land with like your initial beachhead customers could be very different than who like your expansion customer would be. So yeah, I think like the connection between like growth marketing and product marketing is almost synonymous like in the early stages. And that's kind of a misconception. Like to be a really great growth marketer from 0 to 1 or 1 to 3 even, like really need to understand product marketing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. What's a piece of advice that you could give, you know, founders and our listeners from going from 1 to 3?
So 1 to 3, I think the most important thing is to really understand your unit economics. And so, you know, let's assume you've validated that messaging, you know, the channel or maybe a couple of channels that are working to drive your customer acquisition. The next part is kind of upping the ante on that repeatability for some more scale, which is being quite vigilant about those unit economics and finding channels and ways to scale. So I think that's like in 0 to 1, I wouldn't even care that much about like, let's say how much our cost of customer acquisition. It has to make sense, but it doesn't have to be like the destination, right? Like the next 1 to 3 is really about like, how do you refine that to a place where you can confidently scale and find new channels and test into new channels or scale channels even, I think is often overlooked. Like early companies usually want to jump from channel to channel to channel. And sometimes like fewer, more scalable channels can be better, especially to drive focus.
Yeah. I think very much like there's also like the other portion of unit economics, right? Because like we're sitting and doing the math and we're looking at your P&L and it's understanding your break-even point and then what is profitability. And then I think once you are scaling past the $1 million in revenue mark and say you have a couple of products that are selling, you also have buying power with your suppliers, right? And so like a portion of unit economics can also go back to, at least like this is how I'm thinking about it. It's like you're going back to your suppliers and your, you know, maybe your POs are going to be bigger for specific product types. And so you can start talking about better pricing and I think there's, you know, with a lot of the brands we're working with, from the 1 to 3 mark, we don't see that happen enough. Because as soon as you bring down the cost of goods, right, if it's 10, 15, 20%, it's just made your life so much easier in terms of a CPA CAC goal, you know, to become profitable.
Yeah, it's also funny. I mean, I don't know if you do this at 1 to... I mean, I guess you could start, but like, there's also like a shortening of your supply chain timelines and how you manage inventory at each stage of a company, right? It's like, and if you know that this, the more and more you scale, like the faster you can turn things around, like the more leverage that also gives your marketing machine. So yeah, no, I agree. Like it, you have to think about holistically, like all of the levers. And sometimes, you know, even later, like that's customer service or retention and increasing the average order value, or, you know, the lifetime value of the customer.
Where do you see digital going in the, you know, next 2 to 5 years?
I think it's a really interesting time at the, like with the advent of AI. I think like many others have said, like I can foresee a lot of like really high volumes of bad content and quality content really standing out. So I think like there will be probably more of an emphasis on, you know, I would emphasize more on quality rather than quantity. I think it'll be quite interesting to see what happens with SEO. You know, that probably is a channel that is going to change. I think there's also probably going to be more of a swing towards like brand marketing and providing more like kind of with that quality, like how do you think about every single touch point as a representation of your brand? And like, I think it'll elevate the importance of brand marketing, mainly because a lot of the digital touch points can become much more one-to-one instead of one-to-many. So with AI, like a lot, like for instance, like your email's already been increasingly personalized, or like SMS, CRM, everything is increasingly personalized. Like I think we'll just continue to see that moves even further, such that like your marketing channels can almost feel a little bit like sales channels. And then you have really like your big broad brand channels that give you that more like awareness and brand halo.
So AI is getting more and more, you know, like you had mentioned, it'll become more and more prevalent. And I think your take on SEO, like I've just spoken to a number of folks that do AI SEO over, you know, typically having a person go in, pull your metadata, like fix your title tags. A lot of that can now be done via AI. Also, I think, you know, with the advent of like Shopify or a Wix, or, you know, depending on the type of business you have and like the tech stack you're using, it's a lot easier to input your information field, which is more consumer facing, for something like SEO versus, you know, in the past when all these sites were custom built, you had to go in and add all of these tags and ensure like the taxonomy of the site is set up in the optimal way, versus now you just add in a few input fields and, you know, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's also interesting too. Like, I think the definition of a search engine is going to change. Like, video will play a much larger role, I think, in SEO in the future. I mean, the number of times I have heard or read something that says TikTok is like Google's biggest competitor, you know, because people are just searching on TikTok. Like, I think that's going to prevail. Like, the format in which people want video is going to be much more, is going to increase. And so, like, again, AI content creation and like will probably facilitate more video.
Yeah. And, you know, this, like, I agree with you very much. I do so much research on YouTube, right? And like, even when you're Google searching, right, one of the graphs below the sponsored ad is like almost always a video carousel, depending on specific topics, right, or questions you're asking. If there's a video about it and that video has indexed on YouTube, it will also likely index on search. And then it's like, wow, this could also become a sales channel for, you know, the brands that aren't leveraging as a sales channel. And then now, like you had mentioned, right, like TikTok videos, they have YouTube Shorts, which is another area to serve both organically and through paid.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time from a video perspective.
Yeah. What's one question you wish I asked you, and how would you answer it?
I don't know the question exactly, but like something to the effect of like talking about failures and specifically like the perception of growth, at least from like sometimes I think we hear a lot about the success stories, but we don't hear about like the failures. And so something along those lines, I think, you know, especially people in growth, they always want to hear about the thing that grew 10x, 20x, and like, those are sexy and cool. But I think, yeah, the other examples, which aren't as sexy or cool, can shine a light on learnings too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think like on a like smaller scale, right, it's like, hey, I have this cool test and you did this product build, and only to like test and learn that maybe it isn't working as well as other products. Or sometimes like I have a client example, a client of ours launched this SaaS platform, and it's similar story to like an Instagram, right, where it's this cool SaaS platform, does all of these different like workflows for you, only to find out that people only wanted to use this one SMS list sign up. So essentially what they pivoted their business into is now when you have an organic post, client's called High Tide, you have an organic post, there is an auto DM flow that occurs, which, you know, people have been leveraging. But in that DM flow, what they do is they serve you a link to capture your information, and then they're able to track the sales all the way through on from an organic perspective, where, you know, originally they had built their entire company and model not for this SMS organic like lead capture business, but it has totally evolved into this SMS lead capture business. And now they're working with some, you know, household like brands that were startups and, you know, and are starting to work much more and more with startups.
That's cool. Yeah. No, you always love a good pivot or like product evolution. But yeah, I mean, back to kind of the question I would have asked or answered, like, I think sometimes it like, I would probably remind myself that like careers are not linear. Like someone would look at my career and think, how did she go from A to B to C? And so I think it's taking those moments or those failures or both alongside the things that have worked and like coming to a situation and thinking about like, at least when I decide to work on a product or like have the opportunity to and like say yes, it's always like, what is the, you know, do I have conviction in the product? And in like the category, and do I have conviction that I can add value? And so it's sort of like the happy marriage of the two.
Amazing. Where can our listeners find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn, and then I do have a website as well. So I think it's alanagregory.co.
Cool. Well, thank you for jumping on today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course.